It's time now to get behind the headlines of this week's Hendersonville Lightning with editor and publisher Bill Moss.
That's right. The Lightning is on the streets. The Lightning is in your mailboxes. And it's Thursday, which means the Lightning is on the radio. And joining us via Skype this morning, Mr. Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. Bill, let's talk about what we have in this week's Lightning. Let's get right to it, if we can. One of the stories you have is local person, Sally Egoff Wilson. She has a book out. Very interesting story about her life, I guess, and the Egoffs. Can you tell us about that, Bill?
Sure, be happy to. Yeah, they. A lot of people know. Let's start with who is Sally Egoff Wilson. It's going to tweak the ear of some people. Many, many people do know Sally and Bob Wilson, of course, and their four youngins, two sets of twins. It really is really the subject, the topic, the characters in this really wonderful book. People, it's a tribute to Hendersonville, certainly a tribute to the family, the couple, and these kids and their greater surrounding family, whether it's the family they were born into or the family they choose here in the great Hooterville that produces so many great stories and successes. But so people at, well, Egoff Motors, does that relate to Egoff Motors? It's not too common a name, at least around here.
Right.
Sam is the brother of Jeff Egoff. Their father was Bud Egoff, who was a car dealer of some renown and quite a few dealerships, I understand it, in Aurora, Illinois, outside of Chicago, until he decided to come down here in his case, it was the 70s. He bought that car dealership that people, also old timers, will remember as well, that was on the triangle of South Maine, where AutoZone is now, from Pete Folsom. So that got the Egoff family and the Egoff name, and certainly the topic of this story, Sally and Bob Egoff and their children, Kate, Elizabeth, Amy, and Patrick, into Hendersonville for all of their, but with all of the kids are natives, of course, her children are natives. And it's a story about the many trials and tribulations that are more than the average family it is likely to confront and survive.
More than the average family, huh?
Yes. And starting out with, she starts the book in 1982, I think it is, when she becomes, and she's open and honest about all this, where she becomes unexpectedly pregnant with the second set of twins. Discovering this, apparently some days after, she went into Dr. Veazey and got her tube side. And then Dr. Vicky looks at the result and says, looks like we closed the barn door after the horse got out. And that's how open and honest she is in this story. And that starts out with the second set, which is Patrick and Kate. And they follow their older sisters are the twins, Elizabeth and Amy. So we find out that then there was some problems really early on with Patrick's development. He had a serious brain tumor that he had to have operated on at age six, I think it was, at Duke. He had to go back to Duke many, many times. He had his left frontal lobe removed. And in another scene in the book, Sally and Bob are talking to the surgeon and they say, well, what's the next step? How do we replace that? How do you replace that? And the surgeon just looks at them and responds, we don't. And so he had some problems off and on as a young child, and then certainly as a young teenager, and has really straightened out. That is one success story, and you'd think to survive and end up thriving would be maybe enough. But then older daughter Elizabeth suffered a really serious life-threatening brain hemorrhage when she was 22. Working down in Spartanburg after she had graduated with a textile design degree, I think it was. And she survived on the operating table through a tremendous amount of loss of blood, and then recovered for a months-long rehab at the Shepherd Rehab Center. People are familiar with that for serious brain trauma recovery in Atlanta, the Shepherd Rehab Center. And so this is a 2,000-word profile, so I won't go through every paragraph and passage of it, but it's more fun than you might think. That's one thing that we say, and this story is a combination review and interview with Sally, and we go to, of course, telling her story. And for instance, we say, even the way the family acquired Cosmo, their beloved golden retriever, arose from drama and a near-death experience. The pup belonged to a neglectful neighbor before it started hanging around the Wilson's house. It was just, it roamed free, and it would just come over and hang out with them all day, and it stayed with the Wilson's more than it did its putative owner. When Cosmo got hit by a car on Highway 64, it was the Wilson's who found and saved him, the Wilson's who paid for his vet bills, and the Wilson who then adopted Cosmo as their faithful, as their jolly, faithful forever companion. And that's it's a lighter moment in the way it ended up. And then she does go on to talk about Patrick and the time that he had, let's say, good teachers and less patient teachers. As she said, when his temper flared, when his temper flared, he'd land in ISS, in school suspension. People locally know that as ISS at Hendersonville High School. And Sally said in the interview, the interesting thing is that now we have all this mental health awareness and it's now accepted. Before, they just slapped Patrick in ISS. Sally still sees when she recalls a second grade teacher who exclaimed, if he doesn't shape up, he's not going to amount to anything. I would love, Sally tells the Lightning, to go to her now and say, look at him now. He was 1 year out of having his left temporal lobe removed, and they just didn't understand. I think they would be a little bit more understanding now. Patrick is actually the only one that didn't. The three girls came home. To spoiler alert, they come home to great success, marriages, and children. Patrick lives in Colorado, where he drives for USS, relishes being single and childless, unlike his three sisters, and he owns his own home, Sally tells the Lightning. He's got an Airbnb and rents out half of it. He is busy every second of the day. He's trying to work 60 hours a week so he can get his overtime. And I'm just going to say one last, it actually didn't make it in the print version. I think I'm going to add it to the online version. There's these really cool cameos, and the ones I'm thinking of both involve Patrick. One is the special ed teacher people also will know, was in the school system for, I'm sure, 30 years or so. Margie Lampley Capel, believed in high school, believed in Patrick, helped Patrick, was a great, was just really a great influence on positive influence on Patrick. And Star Teal, people know him now chiefly for obviously Hubba Hubba and Campfire Grill, but Star came to us through his camp counselor and later one of the managers of Camp Greystone. People probably know about that camp background as well. They brought so many of our great contributors to our culture and our community here in Hendersonville. And Star Teal was what was probably the first employer of Patrick, and was always willing to work with him and help Patrick a lot. And Patrick was a great success story. The girls overcame a lot in terms of one of them, Kate, that graduated at the top of her class in undergraduate and graduate school, had two false starts in college before she got her master's in psychology and now has a counseling practice here in Hendersonville. The older girls, the first twins, Elizabeth and Amy, are success. One of them is married to a movie star that fans of the Netflix streaming show Longmire would know. Bailey Chase is the man's name. He plays Blake on that, and he's a movie star.
Well, how about that?
And I could read more and more, but I'll move on to what does Sally think the reader should take away when they finish the book. Perseverance, she says, don't give up on yourself and your family. I think that's the main thing. Just keep putting one foot in front of the other, and every family has challenges. There's not a family that doesn't. And we do go on to say an early working title of the book before they decided on Not So Average Family was Proof of Faith. And she thought it's not really a religious book. And she said that might mislead people into thinking it's going to be really about religion. There's a lot of faith in it. And the symbol throughout is a mustard seed, actually, that her grandfather gave to her, which he had gotten from his grandfather. So you see how far back that goes. So finally, we'll come to Sally's parting note of gratitude to her family. It says, quote, Amy, Elizabeth, Kate, and Patrick, you, emphasis on you, you are my proof of faith. So it's a good book. You'll go, if you start reading it, it's a compelling read because you want to see how they make it through these things. It's a roller coaster ride, for sure.
And the book is available now, right?
The book is available at Amazon and every other online bookseller.
All right, fantastic. And, of course, the story is in this week's Lightning. Bill, before we take a break, let's move on. Let's talk about Pardee UNC Healthcare. It was 2.5, maybe 3 years ago, and I'll never, ever forget it, watching a commissioner's meeting when Pardee CEO Jay Kirby was warning the commissioners about the upcoming pandemic, the upcoming COVID-19 scare and what we might be dealing with. Well, now we're dealing with it in another way. Pardee is borrowing some money to help cover those COVID costs.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a perfect setup because I, too, remember Mr. Kirby standing in front of the Board of Commissioners saying this could of course, it's worse for patients who get very sick or die. But what he also warned about is that this could overwhelm you recall at that point they were even talking about whether they had enough PPE, personal protective equipment, and they didn't have enough.
Right.
But anyway, it was warning about everything from that to certainly hospital beds, certainly ICU beds, and especially respiratory care ICU equipment. And it came to pass. It came to pass not quite as overwhelmingly bad as sort of the worst case scenario, but in spikes, in waves, it was bad. And where it was particularly bad was in the second COVID-19 wave of 2021. We didn't endure one COVID spike, Mr. Kirby told the commissioners last week, but two COVID spikes this past year. As a result, the two waves of COVID washed over the country, pushed nursing and wages and salaries to an all-time high that have impacted us tremendously. He kind of goes over, and it's a good recap of really the past 10 years. Pardee's budget has grown from $100 million to $350 million. They see about 8,000 people get admitted to the hospital, about 26,000 in the ER, 150,000 for x-rays, labs, and other ancillary services, 73,000 people a year visiting one of their four urgent cares. They actually had a pretty good year than the first COVID year ending last June 30th of 2021. But as things got worse this year, in particular with the second wave, here's what happened. Ordinarily, a fresh nursing school graduate would come on board for $60,000 a year. Some veteran nurses can make around $90,000. But then with this second wave, we're taking care of sick people, he said, but our staff went down. And as a result, we were all scrambling to meet the community needs and the trust community puts in Pardee. And so they started out on the travel nurse invoice on the rate at $120 an hour. The demand kept going up and it went to $130 and then to $140 and $150 and $160 an hour. That's wow. Over $320,000 a year for 2,000 hour annual work.
Wow.
They were making more than our physicians. And then I'll get out. There's more to this as well. It's a long story. It's got numbers, but it's got a lot of explanation, and it's got some really uplifting things, such as this about the hospital and the team. At our hospital board meetings, in our administrative team meetings, Mr. Kirby told the commissioners, there was never a question as to whether or not we were going to stand down and only accept so many patients in our hospital during the second wave based on our status of having an overstressed staff. It was, quote, go get them. We are the safety net for this community. Go get the people, no matter what it cost. And that's what we did. So the end result of this, the reason for his appearance was to ask for county commission authorization of this $14 million in bonds, which will replenish really their operating account. Which was $16 million to the good in a year ending a year ago, and is around $9 million to the bad. So they dropped $25 million in cash trying to pay nurses and other support personnel and get everything done and respond to the need. Commissioners did approve this $14 million, which should go to competitive bid in front of the banks in the coming weeks. The security obligation to pay these bonds, Mr. Kirby said, is solely party's responsibility. It's not a general obligation bond. It's not a tax, and it's not at the hands of the citizens or you county commissioners. These are difficult times, I know, but good things are coming out of this community, and great things are coming out of Pardee Hospital.
And just a reminder, the reason why Jay Kirby, CEO of Pardee UNC Healthcare, had to go to the commissioners to ask regarding this $14 million borrow is because our hospital is county owned.
You see the property out there. It's county owned.
Yeah.
It's leased for, I don't know if it's a dollar a year or what. It's current. In fact, that's a little footnote.
Yeah.
The current lease is 20 years. The current lease runs out in 18 years. Commissioners had an item on their consent agenda yesterday to extend it by 2 years. So it's going to have to be 20 years because the term of these bonds is going to be 20 years. So that's interesting. And for the ever since 2011, Pardee has operated, people are, I'm sure, are aware, through a management agreement with UNC Healthcare, which is a pretty big dog when it comes to healthcare in the state of North Carolina.
Yep, absolutely. Want to remind folks you are listening to Lightning Radio. We're going to take a break. It's 8:23 in the morning, but when we come back, we're going to talk about the Tom Orr stage being dedicated, a new grant for the Acosta Trail, police custody death in Fletcher, the Eagles outdoor concert for Flat Rock Playhouse, and more. You keep it tuned right here to the Q for Lightning Radio on your community radio station.
Kaysen Builder Supply, the official sponsor of patio season, providing quality landscape and masonry materials, exceptional customer service, and superior delivery from locations in East Flat Rock, Brevard, and Greer. Now is the time to prepare for patio season with a visit to Kaysen Builder Supply in East Flat Rock to see displays of outdoor rooms, pavers, retaining walls, and fire pits. Kaysen Builder Supply, providing exceptional service for over 40 years, the official sponsor of patio season. CaseandCompaniesInc.com.
Finding the right insurance doesn't have to be a difficult task. That's where the professionals at Barnett & Coates come in. Family owned and founded back in 1969, you can rest assured that the Barnett & Coates team has a strong insurance background paired with product knowledge to serve you best. From auto, home, business and contractor liability, and business auto to outdoor vehicles and watercraft, with Barnett & Coates, you'll experience the quality service you only find with an independent agency. Barnett & Coates, Spartanburg Highway near Chick-fil-A, or at barnettandcoats.com.
And we are back with Lightning Radio with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and hendersonvillelightning.com. Well, Bill, we lost Tom Orr this past year. That was quite a bit of a surprising loss, and he is someone who was just so dedicated to the community and to the arts, and this past weekend, very well deserved. The stage at Hendersonville High School is now dedicated to Tom Orr. It is now the Tom Orr stage. Can you talk a little bit about that, Bill?
Yeah, this is, it really was, again, a fun time of that came about because of the sad passing of Mr. Orr. But he had so many so many friends, so many admiring students and fellow and faculty members. So there's actually two plaques on either side of the stage, one showing a profile of Mr. Orr looking out toward the stage and honoring his graduation from Hendersonville High School in 1957 and his years of teaching there from 1962 to 1993. And the other is the one that does memorialize the stage as the Thomas E. Tom Orr Stage. School's superintendent, also sadly soon to be former school superintendent, Dr. John Bryant, Amy Bedingfield McCraw covering this for us. Sounded like he was kind of the keynote here.
Yeah.
He says, some have said they can still see Mr. Orr in the aisles waving his arms. Many recognize that Mr. Orr, I got to know. In so many ways, he was one of those individuals that made this stage a home. He said the two plaques will comfort performers who will step up to the stage with Mr. Orr taking your hand, and they will perform with Tom looking on as he looked on for, nigh on to 30 years as director of the famous Hendersonville High School senior play, and obviously as a renowned and beloved English and theater teacher.
Yeah. You and I were in Kiwanis together, Bill, and one of my favorite days to be at Kiwanis was when Tom Orr was going to be the speaker and talk about the history of this incredibly unique community. Really, really miss Tom and his knowledge of history and so forth. And want to remind you that he had a column in the Times News, a weekly column in the Times News, and they're working on a book. He will have a book out, or folks are putting a book out with a number of his columns coming out soon. So keep it tuned right here to the queue, and we'll make sure to let you know how you can get your copy of that. Bill, are you there?
All right.
Thought we lost you there for a moment. From the Acoustic Trail, boy, we went 10 years hoping we would someday get something called an Acoustic Trail. And boy, the last couple of years, it is consistently in the news with dollars and fundraising and more information about the Acoustic Trail. And this week does not disappoint. A new Acoustic Trail grant has been made. Can you talk about that, Bill?
Yeah, there you go. You set it up perfectly, teed it up perfectly once again. As the Lightning reported, Henderson County has landed a $10.5 million grant to complete construction of the Acoustic Trail from Horseshoe to the county line, sustaining the strong momentum and state and regional support that has sped the Greenway from concept to concrete over the past year. So you'll remember this first 5.5 mile segment, I think it is, from Busy Bend, right in the middle of Hendersonville, to Horseshoe on the south side, you might say, of US 64 before you get to the French Broad River. That's covered. That's under design now. That will be under construction next spring. There will be a big deal groundbreaking when that construction starts, and that's coming up before you know it. We'll probably be riding on the first segment by the summer of 24, so that'll be here before you know it. But this is going to happen, and it is really, really cool. They haven't said for sure. My suspicion is this is going to probably involve a new bridge, a new, obviously, pedestrian, bicycle, baby stroller, inline skating bridge over the French Broad River, and that's going to be a sight to see. Either way, if they can rehab the trestle in a way that an engineer says works and is safe, that would be cool, too. I never said this, but I've crossed that trestle, and it's a fun thing to do, but this is really just fabulous, fabulous news. This leaves, I'll just... just to get the grant of $10.46 million was approved as part of the Federal Highway Administration Surface Transportation Block Grant. That was the same one as that first $5 million grant that's building the first segment. It's an 80-20, which means there is a local match of $2.6 million. So the total amount would be $13 million for this, let's say the last two-thirds of the part in Henderson County of the trail. Not one penny of the match so far has come from Henderson County property tax payers. It has been raised privately. They've got it matched for that first one. Conserving Carolina has been terrific. Obviously, the Friends of Acushla Trail has been terrific. And now several different, both in Transylvania and in Henderson County, with Chuck McGrady, Paige Samel over in Transylvania, and other leaders, Ken Shelton, are doing a terrific job on fundraising. And they are doing a terrific job in the Rail to Trail Advisory Committee. That's the newly formed committee that kind of guides the process and makes recommendations of policies and so forth to the Board of Commissioners.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Bill, because I have a feeling there will be no problem raising the 20% for this this other $10 million as well. Yeah. Bill, one of the things I did note about this is that grant was to build it through to the county line, to the Henderson County line. What I have not heard very much of is the Transylvania County side and funding and all of that. Do you know anything about what's going on there?
I know a fair amount, actually. We don't cover it, but here's the best way to describe that. In Transylvania County, a strong, very strong, unanimous, indeed, promoter and supporter of the Acushla Trail is the Brevard City Council, which will probably take on the role that the Henderson County Board of Commissioners. We talked about a lease a while ago.
Yep.
It's a 150-year lease. So it sounds like it will be pretty safely managed by Henderson County for a while. The similar thing is likely to happen. Brevard has stepped up because Transylvania County Commissioners won't, frankly. Brevard City Council has stepped up and said, we're willing to be the manager that leases it over here for $150 million and manages the construction. And they too have formed a Rail to Trail Advisory Committee. They too have fundraising going on, and the current chair of the Friends of Acushla Trail is from Brevard. So there's activity there. County commissioners are slowly now. I think we have heard now county commissioners over there supported it in a 4-1 vote, and that was the first time that Transylvania County Commissioners had voted, had taken a vote in support of the Acushla Trail from the county line to the end there at the Davidson River and the old mill that is the name of the trail, Acushla Mill.
Exactly. Thank you for that update, Bill, and especially for the Transylvania County side update, too, because I was really wondering about that. Let's finish up with a couple of more stories here before we finish with Lightning Radio this morning. First of all, let's move over to Fletcher. In breaking news, there was a police custody death recently. You can fill us in on that story.
There's a good police chief over there that came here from the suburbs of Chicago and went to the sheriff's office and was hired when Eric Semmy left the sheriff's office and left as Fletcher police chief and went back to work for Sheriff Griffin. That's just by way of background of Dan Terry. He put out a news release about this about 1:30 a.m. that this 35-year-old man had died in police custody after fighting with officers and then being subdued and handcuffed. The officers responded to a call at 352 Season Circle where a woman said, advised that Hensley would not let her leave, an apartment. I think this was just an apartment and was possibly on drugs. A fight began when the Fletcher officers confronted Hensley. They called for assistance from the sheriff's office. I guess after this fighting and being subdued, he passed out, became unresponsive. They administered CPR. EMS was there. They transported him to the hospital where he did not survive. Two officers also taken to the hospital for non-life-threatening injuries. It's all investigated now under investigation, turned over to the State Bureau of Investigation.
All right. And I'm sure we will continue to hear more from the Lightning on that police custody death in Fletcher. Bill, let's finish up this morning with some awesome news. In case you missed the Eagles Hell Freezes Over tour or Hell's Frozen Over tour, guess what? You get a chance to see maybe not the Eagles, but they're going to sound just like them on an outdoor stadium. Flat Rock Playhouse is bringing it back. Last year it was Queen. This year it's the Eagles.
It's a pretty impressive it's a pretty impressive core of musicians with Paul Baily, Dustin Braley,
yeah.
Ryan Guerrero, and Jeremy Sevelets.
Yeah, you're close enough.
Jeremy Sevelets, yeah. Performing all the hits, Take It Easy, Hotel California, Desperado. So that takes place Saturday night at the football stadium at West Henderson High School. Where they sold out the Music of Queen concert a year ago. Ticket choices include premium, stage front, which are on the track right in front of the stage for $65. Bring your own chair seating on either side of the stands for only 15 to 20. And bleachers, 25 to 45, with this important footnote. Bleacher seating is bench style with no seat back, so patrons may want to bring a cushion or stadium seat.
Right.
Go to flatrockplayhouse.org for tickets.
Rhythm
and Blues tonight, right?
And Rhythm and Brews tonight. Yeah, speaking of live music, the second installment of Rhythm and Brews tonight, downtown Hendersonville. Exactly. And a reminder, the Eagles concert also outdoors. It's at West High, right? And there'll be cornhole and food trucks and all kinds of family fun stuff to do.
Yeah, definitely West. If I misspoke, it's out there. Go out to Mills River. Go out toward Mills River. Go to West Henderson High School. And boy, we'll have a big time. Saturday night.
Absolutely, you sure will. Bill, there is still so much more in this week's Lightning, so people need to pick up their copy so they can get behind the headlines and they can understand what is going on in our community. Can you tell people how they can pick up their copy of this week's Hendersonville Lightning?
Sure can, and slightly less sweltering, right, for the next couple of days, especially this weekend?
Well, this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, but it's still going to be hot today.
Well, let's ride around on Saturday and Sunday with that 440 air. Remember that, Mark?
Yes, I sure do, yep.
We'll be riding around with that 440 air, four windows down at 40 miles an hour, to any of the Lightning Orange racks all around the county, or by going to HendersonvilleLightning.com and clicking on Lightning to join the growing legions of Lightning fans that get their Lightning today, Lightning Thursday. Or also, simple as pie, call Jan at 698-0407.
You've been listening to Lightning Thursday with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of the Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. This program, as well as past episodes, can be heard in their entirety on our website at WTZQ.com. Click on air and scroll down to Lightning Thursday.